And welcome to the Crash the Pond podcast, Monday, March 25th edition, back in the saddle, plenty-ish to talk about. Fired up for this one.
Yeah, welcome into our house.
Welcome to our cave.
Our cave?
Yeah, we are prehistoric. We are prehistoric man. We are Cro-Magnon.
Wow.
We have nice paintings on the wall. We have a nice fire. You know, we're still cooking.
We're still cooking? What are we cooking from the wild in the prehistoric time?
We just discovered the wheel. We just discovered fire. Business is booming. Business is booming in this cave.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Things are going great. You know, we're on the cusp of discovering language. You know, right now we're still in the grunt phase.
Oh, God.
But we can communicate well enough to hunt woolly mammoth. So, you know, Ice Age is about to end, so that could be problematic. But anyway.
This took a turn that I was not expecting. Bravo. Bravo, sir.
That might have been my favorite, like, minute of this podcast ever.
Good improv.
That might have been my favorite. But yes, plenty to talk about. And the number one thing. So today, just so everyone knows, we're going to do another kind of deep dive-ish topic. Jake and I are going to each provide three moves, off-season moves, that we think the Ducks should make to address a category of need or an area that we think they should address. But first, we do have some updates to get through,
yes,
which I will let you provide.
Oh, you're putting that on me. Okay.
Yep.
Well, since the last time that we did a podcast, there's actually been a decent amount that happened. Leo Carlson in the game against the Blackhawks took an incidental knee from Alex Vlasic, I believe was the player. Knee on knee contact, really looked scary. It was kind of incidental. Vlasic didn't know what was happening. Carlson didn't know what was happening. Just two knees kind of colliding on two guys turning. And Carlson's knee hyperextended. And it was a really, really scary moment. One of, I think, the more depressing moments of the season, if you are a Ducks fan, because the way that Carlson went down holding that knee, and he was holding the knee in midair before he even hit the ice, had to be helped off the ice, couldn't put pressure on the knee at all. And I think everyone was kind of like, oh no, here we go again with another injury. And good news started coming out later on Thursday night when our good friend Derek Lee from the Hockey News and Sporting Tribune tweeted out that he actually was able to walk out on his own power, no crutches, no nothing, a little bit of a limp, but seemed fine. And then Saturday came around and we got the news that Leo Carlson was fully a part of practice, and just fantastic news. I feel like one of the few injury breaks the Ducks have really gotten this entire season. I feel like anytime a guy has gone down and looked injured, it's been very rare that they have not been hurt for a decent amount of time. Even like, for instance, when Troy Terry got hurt in the game against LA, came back, finished that game, but then was out a couple after that. So really great news there. And then Trevor Zegras news was also on Saturday. He took part in his first, he had been taking part in practice since Tuesday last week, but was in a non-contact jersey, I think, until Wednesday or Thursday. And he, it sounds like, is going to travel with the team. Unclear on when he will play his first game. It sounds like Greg Cronin is kind of really trying to take it slow and steady with him, understanding that he's not played a game since early January. It's been over a 10-week layoff, and wanting to allow him to get his sea legs underneath him before he can get back into a game. But this has now been almost a week. As of tomorrow, it will be a week of him skating with the team again. So I would not put it past them. My bold prediction, and I know this is so bold, Trevor Zegras will be playing the Kraken this week.
Well, just to let people in on the joke, they play the Kraken twice in Seattle this week, which is very strange, but baseball series, mini baseball series.
Yeah, so Tuesday, Thursday, Trevor Zegras will be playing in one, if not both of those games. So, overall, really good news. I mean, the Ducks in these last two games, we don't need to get too much into them, but I think the game against Chicago and the game against Tampa Bay were two of their better games they've played in a long, long stretch. Chicago, you can obviously focus on the fact that, well, it's the Blackhawks. They're going to be playing a weaker team, a worse team. They're going to be playing better. But Tampa, although not being a great 5-on-5 team, they are still a solid enough team. They have one of the best point producers in the NHL. He is leading the league in points in Nikita Kucherov. And so the fact that they played a good game against Tampa Bay, and they quite honestly probably should have won that game with some of the chances they were getting in the third period, I think there's a whole lot of good things to build off of within that game. And I think one of the biggest takeaways I have so far, I guess two of them from these last little stretches. First off, Leo Carlson just looks like he's taking the next step with how he's playing. He just looks so, so fantastic. And the other piece of the puzzle is the Minchikov Lacombe pairing. And so I don't know what your thoughts on that is, but that pairing has been put together since Radko Gudas has gone out. And I think, especially starting with the Chicago game, they've just become really impressive with shutting down attacks in the neutral zone and making quick passes to one another to break the puck out quickly.
Yeah, I couldn't really tell what they really did against Tampa Bay that was that impressive. Honestly, it kind of feels like Minchikov is a bit of the driver of that pairing.
Because, Tampa, I think, was less impressive than
the Chicago game. The Tampa Bay game, I don't think they had a bad game. I just don't think that they as a pairing at 5-on-5 stood out. I thought Pavel Minchikov really stood out. I mean, he scored a goal, a great goal, by the way, but also he really stuck out on the penalty kill. I mean, he had a couple instances where he was just like jumping passing lanes, leading a break, and he actually nullified a Tampa Bay power play by, you know, creating a turnover in the neutral zone. And then off of that rush, the Lightning are forced to take a penalty, and then that makes it 4-on-4. So love to see him get reintroduced. But yeah, I mean, the other caveat to add is that the Lightning didn't have Brayden Point and Victor Hedman.
True.
You may have heard of those guys. They are pretty important to their team. But even still, the Lightning are a very, you know, structured team. They have the championship pedigree. They are a playoff team. They're going to be in the playoffs. They've really separated themselves from that pack in the wild card race in the Eastern Conference. So I thought that for and the other caveat is that the Lightning played in LA the night before. They went to overtime, an older team, like maybe didn't have all their legs, but even still, like all that aside, I thought that the Ducks still gave a really complete effort, you know, like all phases of the game. Even the power play had some good moments. The penalty kill had some good moments, 5-on-5, especially like the first 40 minutes. I thought that they were really I don't want to say in control, but they just didn't really give anything up offensively that was super dangerous. And then offensively, they were able to generate, you know, their top lines were able to generate offense. So they played just kind of a nice, just kind of like what we were talking about last week. Like they just played kind of a good detailed game where everything just seemed to be clicking. Just the little things were clicking.
Yeah, it felt like that was almost like a proof of concept for Greg Cronin, right? Of this is with the team being close to fully healthy, what they could have been this season if all things kind of were kept how they should have been. And one thing Elizabeth Leo actually points out about the Minchikov Lacombe pairing, which I was going to point out also. So shout out to Elizabeth for a very good point. But they were mainly put out there with the Mason McTavish line. And I feel like that was the only line that really kind of struggled against the Tampa Bay Lightning, specifically in their own zone with some turnovers up the wall that just led to extended periods of zone time. So I don't know if you can necessarily pin that on Minchikov and Lacombe for being caught in their own zone as much as the forwards there, because the puck was getting to the forwards, just was not being taken out of the zone from that point. On the flip side of that, I think the Fowler-Zellweger pairing had their best game since being put together. And on the same breath of mentioning Minchikov-Lacombe being with the McTavish line, I think the Fowler-Zellweger line was primarily paired with the Carlson line. And I think that's going to help out significantly in those situations. But I think that we saw them really work well. I think we saw Olin Zellweger have some of the most activated or one of his most activated game where he was jumping up all over the place. And obviously there's the play that comes to mind in the third period where he has that fake slap shot where the puck comes over to him and he ends up making a hard slap pass to Leo Carlson, who tips it, and Johansson just barely gets a piece of that puck. And that to me was just such a high skill level play between two of the younger players on the team. Just really, really exciting to see. I think shows you exactly what Zellweger can bring in that situation, because I think it would be easy for anyone to have the puck come across the ice there and just wind up the one timer there. But the fact that he had the vision to essentially make it to sell the slap shot there and then make the pass to Carlson, who's streaking down the middle, just shows the vision that he has in the offensive zone.
Yeah, and I thought Fowler did a good job defensively on Nikita Kucherov.
Yes, yes.
There were a couple of instances where he was in a one-on-one with Kucherov, and he managed to just keep him at bay, even strip him of the puck, which, I mean, the guy is probably going to get like 130 points this season, so yeah. That's a good job. And also, I think it was probably Patrick that pointed this out, but there's a lot of instances on the breakout, and it stuck out to me watching the game that where even though, you know, both Zellweger and Fowler are lefties, you know, they'll reverse, they'll kind of like, they'll switch sides as they're exiting the zone from behind the net. So let's say Fowler's behind the net, Zellweger will loop in and end up on the left side. So even though, you know, he's been forced to play on his off wing, they're still getting into situations where they're reversing and Zellweger's still able to break the puck out on his strong side. So they're really just like moving him around a ton. And I feel like that really helps insulate Fowler, because Fowler like just isn't as mobile as he used to be. And he's just not as dynamic of a puck mover. I think that Fowler, if you put him on like a 2015 grading curve, is like an elite puck mover. But like in 2024, when there's a lot of guys like that in the NHL, not quite as dynamic. And so Zellweger kind of helps just be all over the place and always be available for a pass. So I'm still kind of TBD on that pairing, but
agreed.
But they had a solid outing.
Agreed. And I think if you wanted to try to point out maybe what could make Fowler excel moving forward, is you look at some of the metrics for him, right? He's been solid enough, replacement level or above, depending on where you're looking defensively. The main issue that he's had is being able to create offense, and how there just really is an offense for coming from him. So I think putting him in a situation where he is just deferring in any of those situations, I think is what is going to put him in a much better position moving forward. And I think that's probably what works so well in this game. And you mentioned it, his defensive work on Kucherov was outstanding, and he had just really good gap control. It felt like there were a couple of moments where Kucherov kind of had the puck going up high into the zone and was going to try to circle or sweep down, try to do something with the puck high in the zone to get down and get a scoring chance. And Fowler was just tight on him and poked the puck off his stick into the neutral zone. There were a couple of instances of that specifically. And I think that is, while Fowler's puck moving isn't there, I think his skating is still there, where he can stay with guys and have a good gap if that's really just what he's focused on, and defers for the offensive side. And I think part of that is also limiting the minutes.
Yes, there's the whole Fowler issue is kind of like multi-layered, where it's not just one thing.
Like, but I think there's still a good player there. I think there's still a good player that can be useful to your team moving forward for the next two seasons.
Yeah, I think that what's interesting is that when you look at his like tracking data with Corey Schneider, and he's now up to 300 minutes tracked, so it's like a bit more of a robust sample. All of his zone exit stats are very strong still, but then kind of everything else has fallen by the wayside. And so that almost looks more like a third pairing defenseman, you know, a guy who's good at breaking the puck out, but isn't necessarily going to do a whole lot else. And so, yeah, like I think the number one thing with him moving forward is just going to be to reduce that role like significantly, because it just feels like there's elements of his game that have kind of gone by the wayside. So
I would agree.
We'll see. Okay. Well, anything else on this recent stretch?
Not really that comes to mind off the top of my head. I just think that
you don't want to give a shout out to Ross Johnston.
Oh, I will, actually. That's a good point.
That was a really nice goal.
That was a really nice goal, and I think the fourth line deserves its flowers for the game they had last night. I think Ben Myers, Jacob Silverberg, and Ross Johnston had a really, really good game. I think that they definitely deserve their flowers. I will keep my critiques and everything I've said of late, but I think that for that game, they deserve their flowers. They got in on the forecheck. I think Ross Johnston also set up Ben Myers for a really nice look front net. Yeah. He's able to get the puck
spin around pass
to the front of the net. So if Ross Johnston can play like that, and that fourth line can play like that throughout the rest of the season, then I would eat my words in terms of at least the down the stretch here. I still don't think that is going to be a fourth line for this team moving forward, but I think that they deserve their credit for having a good game, and you want to see that continue.
What I will give Ross Johnston credit for is that he's trying to play hockey out there. Like he's trying to make plays. He's trying to play within the system. Like, I think that we've kind of had a lot of discussions lately about him versus Delorier, and some people saying, well, at least Nick Delorier fought more. But like when you would watch Nick Delorier out there, like he wasn't fully trying to play. He was more trying to like crush somebody's face into the glass.
Are you talking about when he went for the Little Caesars Arena board?
And sometimes it was his own face. but I feel like Johnston is more out there actually trying to just like play a sound game. And maybe some people want to see him actually throw the body more or drop the gloves more, but I do give him credit for that, that he's, I think he's actually trying to like improve as a hockey player. So
yeah,
that's commendable.
I would agree with that. But yeah, I mean, I think right now it's a really, honestly, I'm really excited for this team down the stretch, because I think prior to these two games, having the two games the way they played, I think was super important, at least just from my perspective as a fan, of getting excited to watch this team again, because I think prior to that, it was a little bit dreary. There was the Minnesota game, like they just could not generate any offense many of those games. And it was just really frustrating. It felt so dreadful. So all these different things. And I think that Chicago game came at a really good time where you knew Chicago was not going to be able to keep the defensive type of game or have the goaltending they had been receiving of late. And so I think having that to just have an entertaining game and followed up by a really good performance, I think just from a fan mental perspective, I think was really important. And then you're going to add on to that Trevor Zegras is about to come back. We're about to have the first time all season, I think, where there's not an injured forward. I guess Jones is now
knock hurt, on but... wood, because that feels like every time someone's about to come back, someone else gets injured.
I think Max Jones just got hurt, didn't he? So there goes that. But I think from the perspective of, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens with this team and how they address it, how they build the lineup around it. Like, I think there's just a lot of really fun, exciting things to look for.
Yeah. And I mean, we should also mention Cutter Gauthier. Like,
true.
I was looking at the Frozen Four, like bracket, the national collegiate hockey tournament bracket. And I'm starting to be convinced that Cutter Gauthier might just play one game for the Ducks this season, because if you look at who Boston College is going to play,
they're going to win their first game, or they should win their first game against Michigan Tech.
They should win their first two games. Like, I just don't know if they're going to, I don't know if they're going to play someone that they can actually lose to until like April 11th. I mean,
they're the number one team in the nation for a reason. Like, they are an extremely, extremely good team. They should win all these games. I think my only thought here is that it's hockey.
Yes, anything can happen.
Anything can happen in a single elimination game. They should very easily win that game against Michigan Tech, I think, is who they're playing in the first round.
Yeah, Michigan Tech. Although I think Michigan Tech has one drafted player.
Yeah, but then they play the winner of Quinnipiac and Wisconsin. And if I'm remembering correctly, I think Quinnipiac beat Boston College this season.
Yeah, Quinnipiac might have a little upset potential, but Wisconsin does not have a very deep roster like they've had in years past. Like, they don't really have that high level talent like they've had. So really, you're looking at the semifinals, where it might be Michigan State. I think that's probably the likeliest to come out of that side.
And realistically, if it ends up going to for those that don't know, just break down how the format is. We've kind of done this a little bit here and there, but basically, I think Friday is BC's first game of the tournament. And so if they win that, they move on and play on Sunday. And if they win that, then they make it to the Frozen Four, which is 2 weeks from this weekend. So if Boston College were to lose any of these two games, then Cutter Gauthier would sign with the Ducks and join them next week. If they make it, then he is going to be playing in the Frozen Four, most likely will not be playing until that final game of the season.
Yeah.
So I from my perspective on this, I think you're rooting for Boston College to lose because you want to see him. But if they make it to the Frozen Four, then at that point, what is a day difference? And so if they make it to the Frozen Four, you want them to win it all.
Yeah, because the last game, the championship game, is April 13th. And the Ducks have a game that night, and then they play one more game on the 18th. So
looks like I was wrong. They played Quinnipiac once this season, and they won it in overtime.
Yeah, Quinnipiac gave them a good game, though.
Yeah, yeah. That was the first game of the season.
You were right about that, but that was a while ago now. So, I mean, just watching that game, the Hockey's Championship against Boston University, though, like, I have a hard time seeing a team beating BC just because of their combination of their elite power play, their elite top end talent, their elite goalie. Reminds me of the New York Rangers a little bit. And then, I just don't think there's a team that can keep up with them firepower wise until maybe the championship. They might be playing Boston University again in the championship.
I mean, they, like, all things considered, Boston College should make the Frozen Four and should make the NCAA title game. Yeah. I just know that when you're dealing with college sports, when you're dealing with players this young, and it's a single elimination tournament, anything can happen.
Yes, but the talent discrepancy is very, very big.
For sure. For sure. And also of note in the NCAA tournament is Western Michigan qualified for the tournament. And so Sam Colangelo is going to be playing in the NCAA tournament. And I would imagine the Ducks are probably going to try to sign him whenever that season is done. Also,
I mean, he might be one that comes out more quickly because they're mm-hmm. playing Michigan State.
I doubt he would join the Ducks. Like, I would imagine he may sign, like, he probably signs a, what is it, amateur ATO and plays with the goals the rest of the season and signs his ELC over summer. That is probably more likely the path for Colangelo.
He's a guy that we'll see in the Ducks' midst sooner than Gauthier, I think. I don't think Western Michigan. I mean, maybe they'll win. Maybe they'll pull an upset, but.
Yeah.
I'm actually excited. We should do like a bracket challenge or something. It'd be fun.
I mean, maybe. Thursday, I think, is when it's needed. So if someone can put together that, looking at you, Tony.
Yep.
I'm down.
Okay. Let's get to today's topic, though.
Mm-hmm.
Three moves that you would make if you were in the GM's chair. So this is kind of like, you know, be creative, do whatever you want, and see where it goes. So the rules are you just have to tell me what need you're addressing or what issue you're addressing, and then give me your move. So why don't you go first?
Okay. So the one I'm going to piggyback on what we've talked about a bunch lately and something Pat Verbeek said, I think adding one more top six forward does a lot for this team, especially one that fits the contending window for this team. And so there's kind of a two-parter to this, but option one, option two. Option one is the Ducks win the draft lottery and they take Macklin Celebrini. That's not really a move you can make, but that is, I think, an option here.
That fixes the situation.
That fixes the situation. You don't need to go out and trade for anyone, sign someone. You have now Macklin Celebrini joining your team, who is a top six forward already, or is going to be a top six forward next season. If that does not happen, then I think trading for Marty Natchez is the way to go. We've talked about it at length here, but just adding someone of that caliber to this team, and I think you look to trade the Oilers' first-round pick, figure out a prospect that they would want. I would even be willing to give up a Tristan Lanneau or something along those lines. And if there's a roster player they want also, I'm trying to think about who that would necessarily be.
I think you would do Vetrano.
Would you throw then no Lanneau probably if there's Vetrano. Vetrano and a first for Natchez.
I think it would be Vetrano first and then maybe a lesser prospect in Lanneau. Because like I think Vetrano is the most tradable piece on your roster.
For sure. I don't necessarily know if I see the Ducks trading Vetrano in the summer, I guess would be my only thought there, but
you don't think they would trade him for Martin Natchez?
I don't know, actually.
Wow. Okay. Well, it doesn't matter because
I would do that though. I would for sure do that. Sure, that adds an issue on your third line because now you're taking away play there, but you can find that. You can go out and like you're addressing a much bigger need here.
I don't think people understand how much better Martin Natchez is than Frank Vetrano. Like agreed. That is a complete non-issue. Mm-hmm. So I actually had that very deal. I had that very piece that you're referring to. I had that in here. I had, Vetrano, the Edmonton first and Lanneau for Natchez. But I will give you the option B to that. I'll just piggyback off of yours. The option B, this would be the option C in your scenario. Go out and sign Steven Stamkos. Three years, $7 million per year. Would you do it?
Say that again?
3x7.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's going to be asking for because he's basically a direct comp for Joe Pavelski.
For me, it's the term. I think I would prefer 2 years, but I would go up to three for him.
Yeah, I think two to three is honestly the absolute max. The cap hit is a little high, but just looking at what Steven Stamkos can still do, like he's gonna hit the 30 goal mark this season. He's still a power play threat. I think that, you know, his numbers are a little bit down this season from a 5-on-5 standpoint, but he's still impacting the game out there. And for what the Ducks kind of need in their top six, and especially like on the power play, where it kind of feels like that left side, that left flank of the power play is just a little bit of a dead zone. Like it just doesn't feel like Troy Terry has ever fully figured it out. Adding kind of a guy with a skill set that you can really anchor everything to just makes a lot of sense. And you know, there is the potential that he just completely falls off the face of the earth and then you look silly. But if you only have then 2 years after that, that's not the worst situation to be in. So
yeah,
but that's like option C. You know, we're not talking about the go-to option.
Correct. And Alex Oliveira says, does he still have it? Some of the underlying numbers are a bit concerning. And I think if you're signing Steven Stamkos, I think the thought there is that, yes, I agree. The underlying numbers are a bit concerning there. I think that that's why he would be option.
He's a complimentary piece with the Ducks.
Well, and where I'm going to go with it is that, yes, he's going to be declining, but that's going to coincide exactly with the rise of all of the players in the Ducks system that are going to be the play drivers, where he is not necessary. He wouldn't be required to be that play driver, and you're going to have more and more of that play driving ability coming from Leo Carlson as the year goes on. You're going to have more and more of that from Trevor Zegras, and all he's going to need to be is just have that elite shot. That's all he's going to have to do for this team. Do that on the power play, get into really good spots, and let other guys kind of do the work for him. And so that, I think, is the idea and the reasoning behind signing a Steven Stamkos, is while the play driving may be falling off, you're adding an elite level finisher that doesn't always go away. That's something that can kind of stay with you late.
Especially on the power play. Like, yes, his power play production this year is still elite. And so I would be very curious to see what that would look like, because I just feel like watching the Ducks power play right now, they just don't have that kind of like that thing that they can build everything else around. They don't have that kind of go-to play that they can just have everything else gravitate towards. And maybe just injecting some of that with the Stamkos could help just kind of orient everyone else. So, okay. What is your next move?
My next move. Sorry, let me get back to my Google sheet. So I guess the only thing was, I wasn't fully clear that these were off-season moves. I thought these were just overall system moves, things like that, when you had texted me about this. So one of them I had was trying to address the penalty kill issue. And so this isn't so much getting different players within the team, but an adjustment specifically to the personnel that are being used. And I think we're starting to see a little bit of an experiment in the Tampa Bay game. Greg Cronin specifically mentioned that that Brent Thompson came to him and said he wanted to adjust the penalty kill, adjust the structure to, because of how poor they were playing. And they went to, I think, more of a diamond type format. But I would just really like to see, and they're starting to do that with having Pavel Minchkov out there a bit more. That is largely due to just guys being down on the blue line. But put Troy Terry out there. See what happens if Leo Carlson's out there. Not saying that like that's the best idea long term, but see what you have out there with those guys out there. Because I've mentioned this before, but a lot of times these high-end offensive players aren't put on the penalty kill enough, and they are sometimes the best at being able to read what's happening. You mentioned it with Pavel Minchikov, right, in the Tampa Bay game, of him being able to jump lanes and causing breakups, messing with the play, and creating breakouts as a result of that. And I think that's what you get when you have these high-end offensive players, and they're able to think the game, and so they're able to read those types of plays ahead of time, as compared to guys that are just kind of playing it safe, trying to just play within the structure. And so when you have those guys trying to get out there, trying to make plays onto the puck, sure, you may open yourself up to some high-quality chances against, but you're also creating a penalty kill that is going to pick off more passes and create more clears, because that's one of the biggest issues for this Ducks team, is that they get stuck in their own zone on the penalty kill and they don't get good clears off as a result of it, because it's always pressured puck battles, things like that, and it's never good reads where the guys are able to get the puck and make easy clears. And Alex Oliveira brings up Toronto uses some of the elite guys on their penalty kill with Marner. I think Matthews is out there. And so that's just something, it's not so much a GM adjustment as it is a coaching adjustment that I would like to see going into next season and for the rest of this season.
Yeah. I mean, I still am so confused what they're doing by having like three waves of forwards on the penalty kill. You know, I think that probably getting away from Henrik is a good thing, because I don't think Henrik was having a good season on the PK. I think now you're seeing a bit more of Leeson. You're seeing a bit more of some of the guys who have potential on the PK. Like, there's more Silverberg out there, more Lundestrom. But yeah, I don't necessarily know what the fix is there outside of just like, don't play Frank Vatrano.
Like, I think it is largely just a personnel thing. Like, yeah. Sort out the better players to be playing in those situations.
Yeah, because it does matter. I mean, like, I feel like the penalty kill is just one of those things that people don't really talk about because it's not, like, the sexiest topic. You know, it's kind of boring, but it is extremely important. And, it's, I mean, especially, like, in the playoffs, you know, when you're killing a keep power play. So, yeah, we'll see what they do. You know, this does make me wonder kind of, like, do they see it? Because Isaac Lindstrom continues to get, like, consistent PK time, and I wonder, like, does that indicate that they see him in the future plans, or is it like a trial run? I'm not particularly sure. Okay. That was a good one.
Yeah. So, like I said, wasn't completely clear that it was just like system or player changes, things like that. So I went for a system one.
Okay. Well, I will identify a need.
Okay.
So let me set the scene this way. How do you feel about this blue line for next season? Zellweger, Fowler, Minchikov, Gudas, Lacombe, Luneau.
I would like to see,
or just like that collection of six guys.
That is, I think, spot on with the six guys that will be on the team next year.
Is that a good six NHL defensemen?
Yes.
So my concern with that is there's two elements of that I'm concerned with. One is Fowler. I just don't know what he's going to be next year. This year he's trending downward this year. There's no question. The number two is Tristan Luneau. Tristan Luneau basically like almost didn't play hockey this season. And he's dealing with this kind of mysterious ailment that, you know, he's recovering from. And we just have no idea what he's going to be next season. Like, I legitimately don't know if he will be able to hang in the NHL next year, just plainly. And then you have Zellweger, Minchikov, Lacombe, who I think will take steps, but there is such a thing as a sophomore slump. We have to be cautious of that. And then Radko Gudas. Radko Gudas is older. You know, like, at some point he will start to decline. So all that being said, I don't know if I go into the season feeling awesome about that group of six. I feel good about three out of the six. At least, like, okay. I would say minimum three out of the six. But to me, RHD, the right-hand side of the blue line, is still a area of need.
Okay.
And so I think that there's two ways you can address it. Because I think ideally what you want to do is bring in another right shot, either to kind of like force Fowler out the door, or just lessen how much you're going to need Tristan Luneau. Lessen, like, maybe that way he doesn't have to play every night. Like, I don't think he should be an every night player next season. Like, there's just so much uncertainty with him. And I look at the Canadians. I look at the Montreal Canadians. And for next season, I think they conceivably have like 10 to 12 defensemen who could make the opening night roster next season. And I just think that at some point, like, they're going to have to trade one of their defensemen. And I look at Justin Barron, right shot defenseman, who I really like, who's a guy who I think, you know, has good size, puck moving ability, good reach, fits Greg Cronin's system. You know, he's 22. He fits the timeline of this team. Got sent down to the AHL this year, but I think I still am high on him as a prospect, or actually I should say as an NHL player, because he started the season in NHL. So I would try to get him and flip Isaac Lundestrom. Just trade kind of one for one hockey trade. I think the Canadians need more of those bottom six guys. They have too many defensemen. Maybe you have to include a pick. Maybe you have to switch up what you send over there, but I don't really see Lundestrom as a long-term guy for this team, especially the way we've talked about maybe adding a top six talent. And so for me, like, kind of a low risk option would be go out and get like a Justin Barron, young, or young right shot D who can, I think, immediately make you better and just kind of align things a little more properly and also take pressure off Luneau.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think I could see them maybe in a similar vein, just bring back Gus Lindstrom for that exact reason. I think getting someone just for cover, I mean, maybe Urho Vaakanainen is that specifically. But
I just don't think Vaakanainen fits the lineup next season. Like, there's just too many lefties as it is. You know, how many lefties are you going to play on their off wing? It just stops making sense after a certain point.
Yeah. Real quick, I'm just seeing this YouTube comment. Want to address it real briefly. Ronald McDonald says, I know everyone thinks that right when BC season ends that Gauthier will join the Ducks. If BC wins the national championship, I think there's still a slight chance the Ducks wait till the offseason. Nope. 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 The reason for that is I guarantee you one of the big things, if you think back to the reason why Cutter Gauthier let it known that he wanted to be traded, was a souring of the relationship between him and the Flyers as a result of them stating that he would be able to come out once the season ended and then reneging on that. I guarantee you as part of this, that part of the, with Verbeek, they were going to sign him to burn this year off the contract. That is something you have to do to make right, to do right by these players, to get them out. And so they are going to sign him to an ELC, and he will be playing that last game against Vegas, similar to even Jackson Lacombe losing in the national title. If he would have won that game, would have come out and played the games for the Ducks. So that I would put it at honestly, a 0% chance that happens, that they would wait till the offseason. You burn the year to do right by the player.
Okay. And then my option B for this category would be to sign Brett Pesce. So I think that, again, this right side of the blue line is just so uncertain. Fowler is going to be gone in not that long anyway, whether you buy him out or not. Like, he is not long for this team, I don't think. And so bring in just like a stabilizing veteran, kind of like another Gudas mold, again, taking pressure off certain guys, maybe allows you to try to buy out Cam Fowler, or try to move on from another young left shot defenseman. Like, it just gives you options. But I think if it were up to me, I would try to do either of those moves, either try to bring in someone who fits the timeline or just bring in a veteran to kind of help stabilize things on the right side.
Yep.
Okay. I'd what agree. Is yours? What is your next
one? All right. One? Mine is another system one. We've talked about this a bunch, but I think Greg Cronin has really focused on having a team that's going to be a high forechecking team, dump it in, get the puck back, almost like a Carolina Hurricanes type of setup. And the thing is, that's just not what he has. That's not the horses that he has in the top six. I don't think they're going to add someone that's necessarily going to fit that. I think adjusting it to where they're going to be more fine with transition-based offense, more fine with getting in with the puck and creating offense off of those clean zone entries instead of focusing on that. You can have your bottom two lines be more that kind of forechecking, grinded out type of line setup. But I think focusing on that with your top six is not doing yourself any favors. So I think looking back on the season, looking at what you have, understanding that you need to make some adjustments and making those tweaks is what I would want for this team in the offseason.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on that. I used to be in the boat of like, why emulate another team? But like, if you look at the top players on Carolina, like, you know, would you look at them and say, oh, like they are natural fits for what the way Carolina wants to play? Like, I think, yes, every team has an identity. Every team tries to do certain things. And like, look where it's gotten the Hurricanes. They're consistently a top regular season team.
For sure.
They are consistently a threat in the playoffs. Like, I feel like there's been a little bit of pushback towards that. And I think in part because the Ducks just haven't been good. And so it's like,
well, I also think
concept.
I also just don't know if that's the best way to deploy the players. And maybe this is growing pains. Maybe that will change next year. But
that's
the
thing. Like, we're not looking at the final product.
Sure.
At the end of the day, we're not looking at the final product. We're also we're also looking at a lot of guys who, quite frankly, just aren't going to be here when this team is actually in that Carolina Hurricanes position.
Yeah, I think probably a better way to phrase this then would be to go back to the drawing board, assess what you have, assess what worked for that top six for your best players on your team this season, and assess what didn't work. Assess when they were struggling, assess when they weren't creating that offense. And don't just be stringent with your system, adjust that system and tailor it to those players, because, I mean, Leo Carlson is probably going to be a Duck longer than Greg Cronin is. Like,
wow.
That's not a bold statement either.
Harsh. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think that they will definitely reassess, but I don't think that what they're doing is necessarily like a bad way to go. If you look at when Troy Terry and Leo Carlson are out there, for example, or when Trevor Zegras has played this season, like, does it look like that the way they're being asked to play is holding them back? Like, we were just talking about how Leo Carlson looks amazing.
That's a fair point.
Like, does it look like they're playing any differently than they would on another team? Like, I kind of feel like there are overarching concepts of how they want to forecheck, how they want to forecheck in the neutral zone, how they want to defend in their own zone. But I don't know if that really is like a huge deal for how the top offensive guys play. I think that's more of a deal for like the bottom six, or, you know, your third and fourth line, and how they're going to play, because those are probably going to be players that are more dependent on your system. And yeah, this season,
that's a very, very fair and valid point.
This season, Isaac Lindstrom, Jakob Silverberg, Ryan Strong, like these guys are not fits for this. I agree with that. And so that's kind of like the, although Silverberg's had a great season, so maybe I should take that back. But
and to be honest, I think I've made that argument on this show before. I think just kind of as the season's gone on, especially with how devoid of offense they were for a little stretch there.
Yeah.
I think,
but look, finding who's in the lineup.
True. Like, yeah. True. No, fair. So fair. I'm not going to take back my point, but I will very, very much.
I mean, your point is a valid one. And I think yes, it is very much to be determined if this approach will work,
yep,
for Cronin. Like, I think that there have definitely been times this season where their kind of commitment to this approach has cost them. And so I think it's completely fair, and even it's needed to scrutinize it. But I also think that this is like, you got to take a longer view of like, where are they trying to go and who's going to be there when they get to that destination. And like you said, growing pains, like that could be what this is, or it could mm-hmm. be that this just doesn't work, but we will find out. We will all find out together.
Yep.
So, okay. My next one is a trade.
Okay.
Bottom six need. That was the need I'm addressing here.
Okay.
We've talked endlessly about how the bottom six isn't good this season. And even next season, I don't know if it'll be that much better. Like, because if you really do have a third line of like Strom, Killorn, Vetrano, I'm worried about that. I don't know if I have much faith in that. And so I think that you need to go out and you need to do something about it. And the team that I look out east, in fact, north of the border.
Ooh.
Toronto Maple Leafs.
Okay. Good, good. You didn't say Montreal again.
And I look at the left side of their blue line. It's bad. Like, it's just not good. you know, they went out and got Joel Edmondson, but like Simon Benoit is in there. You know, TJ Brody is 33. Morgan Riley's on a massive contract, but he's really like their ace on that side. I think that they need to do something about that. I think that they need to add more dynamic play from their blue line instead of just kind of trying to fit in these like bigger shutdown physical defensemen and actually get someone who can play with your horses up front. So I look at the Ducks coming back to the West Coast and I say, they've got a lot of these players. They've got a lot of these young left shot D. And I mean, we've been talking about it ad nauseum, but it's going to be hard to keep everyone together forever. Especially yeah. like, and even next season, we talked about it, like the group is kind of, you know, it's not the most certain. And so I would say this, you need an upgrade in the bottom six. You also need someone that can fit your current timeline. You don't want to just make a lateral move per se. I am sending Jackson Lacombe to the Toronto Maple Leafs for Matthew Knies.
Ooh.
And you may have to add a pick.
You have to add.
But Matthew Knies is not having a great season. Like
I still just don't know what it would take for Toronto to give up him.
Well, here's the thing. The Ducks also probably really value Jackson Lacombe.
That's fair.
So that's fair. I think that there is a bit of a yin and a yang there. But yeah. I agree with you. I think Matthew Knies is the player that excites me more between those two. But I think that Jackson Lacombe could really help the Leafs. I think he could really shine there. And I think Matthew Knies just really fits what the Ducks need right now. Like he's not necessarily having the offensive output this season. You know, some of the underlying numbers maybe don't pop as much, but just his mobility, his skating, his playmaking, like he is the exact archetype that I think of like a modern third liner, right? It's not a guy who's, you know, pounding people through the glass, but a guy who can actually just keep up with the play, make plays, contribute some offense here and there. And so, like, to me, it's a win-win. If you have to add a pick or you have to, you know, up the offer in some way, I think that it's worth it because you're really, like, you're fixing one problem and you're like you're basically fixing two problems in one with this trade.
Yeah. Agreed. I think that that's a really good shout. Anything else to add on that? Because I want to bring up this comment actually from our YouTube chat.
Let's hear it.
This is something I've actually brought up, I think, in Discord before. So I wanted to mention it. Sparkman said, Strome for Raquel. Same cap hit, but Raquel has one more year, which might make the Penguins want to do that to get rid of the extra year on it. Maybe the Pens add a pick because of that extra year even.
Yeah, Ricard Raquel's not having a good season. Like, I don't think I would do that.
Who would you rather have, him or Strome?
Honestly, like, looking at Raquel's numbers this season, like, I think I'd rather have Strome at this point.
Interesting. I haven't done a deep dive into his numbers, to be honest, so interesting. Yeah.
Like, I mean, I'll just give you one number here. He has 11 goals this season. So,
yeah.
You know, playing with the people he's playing with, that's probably not a great sign. And then just his overall impact, you know, it's never been the strongest. And maybe there's an argument that, like, his skill set fits better with what the Ducks need than Ryan Strome. But, you know, with the extra year on the contract, I think I would just bite the bullet on Strome, honestly.
Okay. All good. Yeah. All right. Want to get to questions?
Yep.
All right. So we're going to start with our Patreon-exclusive Discord. Go to patreon.com/CrashPond, where if you subscribe at the $2 tier, you get access to our Patreon-exclusive Discord chat. So Extend Leeson Drumminger said, how high has this team's floor really been raised? I think significantly.
Like, I mean, by what? What are we talking about?
I think by Cronin, I guess, would be my guess as to what he's getting at here.
It's been raised from Dallas Eakins, yes.
It's been raised.
Yeah.
I think that you look at kind of how they play, everything like that, the floor has been raised. And they also said, who was the brilliant genius that banged on the drums to sign Thomas Suchanek to an entry-level contract? Shout out to Thomas Suchanek for getting signed to that deal. We haven't mentioned that yet. He's had a really good season in San Diego, so good on him. Shaking Wing said, what would a McTavish contract look like? What would you do, and what would you expect? Would you expect Verbeek to do what he did to Zegras and Terry? Well, Terry's different. It would be more so what he did to Zegras and Drysdale. So what do you think of the McTavish contract/extension looks like?
I mean, I could see him trying to get an 8-year deal. I think that that's probably what he would shoot for, but I don't know. I think I could see that going either way. I could see the Ducks wanting to give him a bridge. I could also see the Ducks just being like, nope, we've decided that you're it. We're signing you for 8 years. But I think a bridge deal is probably more likely.
Yeah. This will be potentially a telltale for how Verbeek is going to handle the RFAs without arbitration rights. I think if McTavish gets signed to a 3-year deal, I would not be surprised if almost all of the RFAs get signed to 3-year deals.
It's also
Leo Carlson might be the only one.
He also has still another season. I feel like how next season goes is going to be really telling.
Yeah. So it's hard to say. I think you're spot on there, but I think probably a 3-year. I mean, I can honestly just see a similar Zegras deal.
Yeah. I just think that McTavish doesn't have the hangups that Zegras had with the defensive game and blah blah. And again, like, the thing with McTavish is, like, we just have to see how next season goes. Like, if he has a breakout season, which, I mean, some will argue he's already had, but if he has, like, a true, you know, 60 to 80 point season, then I could see them just locking him up for the 8 years
potentially. I mean, we thought that they would do that with Zegras, and
they should do. Like,
no,
they should sign these guys to these long-term deals that end up being discounts.
Agreed. Peasant asked Louis, said, is there a world in Steven Stamkos is a Duck?
I think there is a world. Yes.
That is a bit for everyone out there, because as you can imagine, that probably made zero sense. Sean Siebold said, if he makes it to UFA, should the Ducks try and sign Montour? And what current Duck would make the Capitals a true playoff team?
Montour?
Should the Ducks go out and try to sign Montour?
I'm down for Montour. I'm all in on. I'd be fine with Montour.
It adjusts the long term plan for this team in terms of the blue line a bit.
Does it though?
But it changes it. You have to make adjustments.
I don't think it really makes a huge difference. Like, I think adding a right shot D, like I was talking about earlier, doesn't really change a whole lot, because Fowler's on the outs. Luneau is a complete unknown. Gudas is going to come off the books at some point. Like, he's not on this like long-term deal. So I just think that the question is more, is Montour a good fit stylistically? And that, I think, is like, you could look at it two ways. You could say, well, he actually fits perfectly because he's kind of that like off puck activating offensive defenseman who is just going to blend with what they're already trying to do. Or it's like, hey, you've already got enough of those guys. Maybe you need to add someone who's a bit more stay at home, a little more stable. So that would be that's the bigger question for me.
And Sean Siebold said, what current Duck would make the Capitals a true playoff team? I mean, Carl, like, just name the best player on the Ducks.
Wait, hold on. So is that presupposing that the Capitals are not a true playoff team?
I guess.
Because they're probably going to make the playoffs at this point. I hope people are ready for that eventuality.
So who do you think would be best served to be on the Capitals?
Hold on. Let me pull up their lineup. I can't answer this question without looking at the lineup.
Okay.
So let's see. First line, Ovechkin, McMichael, Oshie. Okay, just Leo Carlson.
Yeah. Give19 the Seed Drumbanger said, which member of the current roster not named John Gibson or Frank Vatrano is most likely to get traded?
Traded. So I could see Lundestrom being in like a hockey type deal where he gets traded kind of like one for one for like another pending RFA. I think the same thing could be said for Max Jones, although Max Jones is 26. So like, I don't know how much intrigue there is around him. Bo Grew, another one of those guys who, you know, he could maybe be in that type of trade, although I think the return will be very low. So there's like a number of guys like Vakanainen, same thing. I could see one or more of the RFAs being swapped.
Yep. Give19 the Seed Drumbanger says, who gets benched for Zegras? I mean, I would assume it's just going to be Max Jones. Max Jones is hurt, so he comes out of the lineup. Zegras comes in, easy swap. Cutsman Cometh said, what event is more likely to solidify this team's next captain? McTavish getting into his first fight or Terry shaving his head a la Getzlaff? And then parentheses, he really needs to.
Terry. Just embrace it.
Brad said, next year's D pairings, Minchikov, Lacombe, Gudas, Zellweger, Vakanainen, and Fowler. What are your thoughts and where does Luneau fit in?
I mean, it's a great question. I don't know where he fits in.
What do you think of that group? Do you think that?
I think that group, while it could be promising, is also a bit of an unknown. Like, I think there's become this notion that the Ducks blue line is kind of figured out for the next 2 years and that it's this static thing. And I just don't know if that's the case. I just don't know if you can expect all three of Zellweger, Minchikov, and Lacombe to progress in this like linear fashion. I don't know if you can expect Gudas to remain this good at his age year over year. I don't know if you can expect Fowler to be any good. So like, I'm just a bit iffy. There's great potential, but there's also a downside too.
Yep. And they said next year's third and fourth line, his guess it is Killorn, Strom, Vatrano, Lundestrom, Leeson, Myers. What are your thoughts?
I don't love it. I just don't think that that's a good bottom six. I think that Killorn, Strom, Vatrano.
That's a fine third line.
I think that that's potentially a bad third line. And then Lundestrom, Leeson, Myers, it's a fourth line, but
yeah, Lundestrom's not coming back. I'd like to see Leeson come back. I don't think he is.
Myers, I just don't think you can have Killorn on that line. He's just too slow, too like
fair,
unidimensional. I don't know. Just
the Puff. So the Puff asks, is Cronin or Verbeek on the hot seat if we still aren't competitive next season? Not playoff sure, but at least trending that way.
I think that Pat Verbeek has a ton of leash with the franchise, but I do think that if they still are where they are this season, that there is an added kind of tension and pressure on both of them.
I think Cronin gets on the hot seat before Verbeek.
Yeah, I mean, the coach always goes before the GM, but I do think that Verbeek is the one who kind of tore this thing down. He's the one who's preaching patience, so he's going to have to show some proof of concept soon.
Co-champion Bastard said, when can we expect an Anaheim Ducks and Jack Kopacker reunion?
Never. So jinx. Good.
Extend Leeson Drumbanger said, how would we be feeling if Western Michigan faces off against Boston College in the NCAA Frozen Four Finals?
would be great.
Yeah. No real thoughts.
Can watch two Ducks prospects at once.
Yeah. Give Love 19 it. The seed. Drumbanger said, if the Ducks don't pick top three, would you make it a top priority to trade the pick for top forward / D?
No, I'm not trading the pick.
No. Like Scott Wheeler put out his tier ranking, and while you can maybe criticize the group that's there, we had some chatter in our prospect chat today. He has tier two being like from second overall or his second best prospect down to like 11 or 12. And largely kind of that's the tier there. So if you are outside, if the Ducks maybe fall to fourth or fifth, like they're still going to be getting a really, really good player there. And it could be the guy that's second on their board even in that situation.
Correct. This draft is going to be completely all over the place.
Yeah. Extend Lease and Drumbanger said, in response to the suggestion to get Brandon Montour, why would you want to give up more assets to get a guy back that you originally had? I mean, Montour is a free agent. You don't give up any assets to get him.
Well, you give up cap space for
sure,
for like 7 years, but.
And that was also a deal made by a previous general manager.
Well, and also like this Brandon Montour did not exist at that time.
Yeah.
like if Brandon Montour was playing the way he's playing now in Florida when he was in Anaheim, he would probably still be a Duck.
Yep. Danny Mee said, who is your sneaky Stanley Cup final?
That is a great question. I'm going to go Winnipeg in the West.
Okay. That's a good pick.
And I'm going to go,
I'll go Toronto in the East.
I guess that's sneaky because no one expects them to make it.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, Winnipeg is the stealth.
Winnipeg Toronto sounds like a miserable, like media matchup though.
I mean, I think it'd be a great on ice matchup.
Agreed.
But I think that the league office would be very displeased with that.
Yeah. Okay. So I got this comment on YouTube on our last video, and they asked if we could answer this on the next podcast because they think it would be a fun topic. Nisrini Prihadi, sorry if I butchered that, said, assuming Verbeek has set the top six for next season with McTavish, Leo, Zegras, Terry, Gauthier, and a winger, which has also set the third line as Strom, Vetrano, Killorn. This means we already have center depth in top nine with McTavish, Carlson, Strom, and won't need another high-end center in the future. If the Ducks get first overall, do you think Verbeek will still take Celebrini or address the need of another department? If so, who will get pushed to the wing between Leo, and McTavish? Because I don't see any of them playing third line. So more or less kind of if the Ducks get first overall, I think for you and I are both on this. You take Celebrini, no questions asked. But what does it do long-term to this team? Do you just play three centers? Do you shift someone to the wing? What do you end up doing?
Well, I think what they will do is have Celebrini and Leo as your top two centers. And then everyone else just kind of like figures it out, shifts to the wing. But I think what I would do is have like a three center. Like Leo, I mean, they might do this as well. Like just have McTavish, Leo Carlson, and Celebrini. But I would go Celebrini, Carlson, and then Zegras at center, and just like have like a Zegras Gauthier tandem or something like that. Like it just opens up so many possibilities if you get Macklin Celebrini.
Yep.
But there's like literally zero question about whether he'll be taken at first overall.
Yeah, and we also got this question from RW Wheel says, do you think Dustal is one of the more promising young goalies in the league? And at the end of their careers, who has a better resume, Dustal or Gibson?
Ooh, that is a great question. I mean, how do we rate Gibson's career thus far?
Really good start to his career. Mediocre, middle and to current date. Partially due to team environment. It's hard to
judge him. Yeah. I mean, I think that Dostal, just because of timing, may end up having a better career because he's just kind of joining on the upswing instead of kind of like on the downswing. But I still hold out hope that Gibson can have a great ending to his career. Like, that's still not out of the question.
Yep. All right. So now I'm going to go to Twitter real quick, and then we will get to Twitch and YouTube, and then we're going to get on out of here. So Hockey Sal said... he wanted to share a little research with us. He did this week on right-hand shot defensemen. That was an eye-opener. 42% of defensemen that have played in the NHL this year shoot right-handed. 8 of the last 12 Norris Trophy winners are right-hand defensemen. 8 of the last 12 Stanley Cup winners, number one defenseman was right-hand shot. There's a definitive trend since 2012 for the next pod. Why and how do the Ducks get theirs?
For the right shot defenseman?
Yes.
I mean, you guys keep saying, oh, it's okay if you have lefties everywhere, but I'm telling you, it matters. I mean, hey, maybe Tristan Luneau will be that guy. I think that's what the Ducks are hoping, and that would be a good story if it were to be the case. So,
yep.
Tristan Luneau, there you go.
All right. Trevor Zebras had two questions for us. What would your thoughts be if Verbeek made a move for Line A as that top six right-hand shot guy?
I'm kind of just done with the Line A discussion.
Okay.
I'm no longer interested.
Doubt it would ever happen, but would you do Zellweger for Brant Clark if you got offered that?
No. Hell no. Like, that's okay. that's an auto no. Like, I think Brant Clark could be great, but I just, the way that Zellweger moves compared to how Clark's skating is still very much not great. It just not close for me.
Yep. All right. So now we're going to go to YouTube and Twitch. So for those of you listening on your favorite podcast services, you can find us at twitch.tv/crashthepond, where you can subscribe to our channel. If you have Amazon Prime, you get one free Twitch Prime gaming sub each and every month. And you can be just like our good friend Kim Pafu, who resubbed for 46 months and said, say nice things about Silverberg again. He deserves his flowers. He should be a florist at this point with how many flowers he has gotten. So there's that. So you can support us there. Also, you can follow us there, get notified when we go live. Or if you have a YouTube account, and yes, I know everyone listening to this has a YouTube account, go to youtube.com/crashthepond, where you can find our videos, watch us when we're live there, take part in the chat, and please like our videos. If you're watching this right now live, watching this after the fact, like the video. It does help out more than you can imagine. So we had a couple questions in YouTube, from one from Zach. Verbeek has openly mentioned a need for a right winger. He has a close relationship with a big name free agent right wing. How do we feel about the decent possibility of 88 as a Duck?
88?
Is Patrick Kane? Does he have a close relationship with Patrick Kane? I don't know about that.
Wait, is that has to be about Patrick Kane, right?
88 has, what other 88s are there?
Is, I mean, this, Martin Natchez is number 88, so.
But oh, Kane was his billet. Someone had mentioned that like his billet before, and that's. I mean, I did not know that.
So I think Patrick Kane has been, like, has had a great season for the Red Wings, and the question with him is always going to be like, what's he going to look like a year from now? Because he's got a bionic hip at this point. I mean, I wouldn't hate it. Like, I know that people don't like him, like off ice, whatever. But
yeah,
when you compare what he's been in the past to what he's been this season, part of it is that he's playing on a line with Dylan Larkin, and that has certainly helped his numbers. But just watching him, like, yes, he's slow. But the skill that he adds, and maybe kind of more of a complimentary piece, clearly he can still play with great players. I wouldn't hate it. I would be fascinated by it.
I'd probably pass, but I'm just now mind blown that Kane was his billet.
Yeah.
There you go. Mohammed Zegra said, question, agree or disagree, a decent cutter Gauthier is comparable to Adrian Kempe.
Maybe. I could see where you're going with that, because he loves to shoot. He's not the most, like, cerebral. I think Gauthier might not be as fast of a skater, but I could see that. I think that's not a bad comp.
Yeah. He also had this question, and I don't understand it, but I'll read it anyways. It's not a relevant hockey question, but he asks, when your cat's a meme and your dog is too, and it's hard to know what's fake or true. Is that a song that am I missing something here?
Well, it's not a question because there's no question mark.
There's no question mark, but there, I feel like there's something I'm missing there. And I feel dumb, but I figured I would read it anyways.
That's okay.
That's what I'm here for. Sparkman said, Felix, you were high on Yuri Saketch when he joined the Canadiens. Were you high on Yuri Saketch when he joined the Canadiens? Same question to Jake when he joined the Ducks. Yes, I was.
Yeah, he was. I enjoyed him so much playing for the Habs and then on the Ducks. Very unfortunate that it never really panned out, but yeah. One of my favorite players all time is Yuri Saketch.
He was so fun.
And nowadays, when you say that, like, some people actually don't know who that is anymore.
Sad.
Makes me sad.
Ricky Eat'em Cakes was a really fun line for the Ducks.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Leo said, question, why not try Minchkov Fowler on the top pairing? Short sample, but they've played well before. He also has the experience, more experience than Olin, and I'm not sure him and Gudas have chemistry.
Yeah, they could work, but...
they have good numbers in a small sample. Like, she is right there.
Can I just say this? Can I just air my grievances? I am just done watching Cam Fowler. I'm done. Like, buy him out. Buy him out, boys. The Simpsons GIF.
Disagree.
Like, well, I just, like, he's just doesn't fit anymore. He's slowed down. The numbers are bad. Like, I'm done. Move on, please.
All right. Rooch said, am I the only one here that sees Gauthier potentially more of a Chris Kreider mold?
No, I don't think he'll be Kreider. Like, I've seen that comp for him, but he just doesn't have the, like, physicality and the kind of, like, net drive ability, like, speed down the wing. Like, that's just not his game.
Yeah. Elizabeth Leo said, question, Terry seems to struggle with entering the zone on the power play, and he just seems indecisive on the power play sometimes. What does he need to work on? I don't think it's necessarily just him on the power play entries. I feel like it's the system that they have.
Oh, here we go.
What?
Here we go. Let's blame the system when it's Terry that's under the microscope.
No, but I think for sure he needs to improve, but I think it's all around the power play zone entry setup is just really poorly designed. And whether it's him or Carlson.
I actually disagree with that.
I think it's just really predictable.
I don't think that's even true. They don't. Okay. The thing you're talking about, the drop pass thing.
Yeah.
They don't actually really do that often.
I feel like they do it every single time.
No, they don't. They definitely don't do it every single time. That I can say for a fact.
I need to go back and rewatch then.
You do. My answer to this question is that Troy Terry's not really a power play guy. And that's okay. Not a power play quarterback. And that's okay.
I will go back and rewatch a game at some point just for power play zone entries.
You will not. And that's okay.
Yeah, most likely I'm not. I'm busy. I got a lot going on. Oh man, that's what it is. Mohammed Zegras said it, and TG also said it. It's the saw. Have you seen the commercials for the Telemore Dew whiskey?
No.
Well, that was the lyric from there. When your dog, whatever it is. Now I feel dumb. Let's see. Michael B said, question, why does Max Jones lose so many puck battles?
Max Jones is just like unhinged when he's playing hockey. And sometimes it results in that.
Yeah. Elizabeth Leo also asked, do you think Mason McTavish is 100% healthy? He just looks off. Also, do you worry about his defense? I'm pretty convinced he is not healthy. Because in the game against the Lightning, he was caught at a couple points in time, bent over, skating around, holding his back.
I mean, I thought he had a decent game against the Lightning. I thought he made some really strong plays.
I think he had some strong plays. He also had some poor plays, not even talking about the 3-on-3 play. But I just think from the perspective of seeing him skate around, kind of hunched over, holding his back, I think that kind of goes to show you that he's probably not 100% healthy. He's probably fighting through something. So I think that's going to do it for questions, though.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, everyone, for your questions. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you want to help keep supporting this podcast, we are going to get on out of here. But there's some really easy ways for you to do that. The number one way is to go check out our Patreon page. That's at patreon.com/crashthepond. So for $2 a month, you get access to our patrons-only exclusive Discord server. This is places a lot of fun. You get to connect with other diehard Ducks fans. We have a lot of games that go on. So, like, for example, during the NHL draft, we have an NHL draft game where people join in, try to predict who's gonna, try to predict draft order, stuff like that. Just a very fun community.
It also looks like Goose has created a bracket challenge already for us.
There we go. NCAA hockey bracket challenge. And then you can up that pledge to $7.50 a month. And with that, you get two bonus podcasts and you also get bonus player breakdown videos that are forthcoming this week. So that's at patreon.com/crashthepond. You can also leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. These go a very long way. They're completely free to you and they take just about like a minute or two. very low effort, but they go a long way for us. You can also leave us feedback and subscribe to us on Spotify. We greatly appreciate that. Or wherever you get your podcasts, we are on YouTube, youtube.com/crashthepond. Search Crash the Pond there. Player breakdown videos, the podcast, YouTube clips of the podcast itself, it's all there. A great way to support the show. And again, totally free. Just subscribe there. Check out our website, crashthepond.com. We've got a shop. You can get cool t-shirts, which we've got up on the screen here. Anaheim Vibes t-shirt. Anaheim, the Vibes HC is still strong, still going strong.
The vibes are still here.
The vibes
are back.
We're
having a good time.
The vibes are back. They never left. But also like coffee mugs, stickers, just fun stuff. And also like at the end of the day, you're supporting us and we greatly appreciate it. You can also find us on social media. We are on Twitter and we are on Instagram. And I believe we have a TikTok. So with all that being said, thank you for listening, everyone. And we will talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Bye.